Well, term limits would require an amendment to the Constitution. The Constitution demands that Supreme Court justices have a term for life. So that's an initial hurdle to this extreme type of idea.
It's huge.
It's huge. It's something that's undoable, basically. Yep. But it shows the extreme policies and ideas that are coming from the Biden-Harris camp in trying to essentially undo the laws that they don't like.
We the people of the United States.
More perfect.
Union.
Heritage legal expert Hans von Spakovsky.
Hans von Spakovsky, thank you for being with us once again today. I wanted to ask you about Joe Biden's proposal for Supreme Court changes, constitutional changes, big changes. What did you think when you heard him come out with these? And what's the possibility or probability that his suggestions might get done?
There's absolutely no possibility, I think, of any of this getting done. And my real reaction was this has nothing whatsoever to do with supposedly making the court a better place. It has everything to do with politics and Joe Biden not liking the outcome of particular cases. And in fact, what he's proposing is a huge attack on judicial independence.
When I heard Joe Biden talk about the immunity portion, the Supreme Court ruling, he kept saying, like, nobody needs to be above the law. I don't know how much more definitively this can be answered by any form of government than what the Supreme Court ruled. They did not rule as broadly as they didn't say he has immunity to do whatever he wants. They made it very specific. It had to go back to the earlier courts for them to determine official acts and non-official acts. I mean, to me, it seems like the people who are running on you have to win or democracy dies, that the only way they'll ever be satisfied is if they get their way.
No, that's exactly right. And in fact, what he said in his speech, no reasonable person reading the Supreme Court's opinion could come to the conclusion that they said that. They did not say that he's a king or a dictator, as Biden claimed. They didn't say he's above the law. A president who engages in bad acts can be impeached. And it then says in the Constitution that if he's impeached and removed from office, he's then subject to, in essence, criminal prosecution. What the Supreme Court said was that generally a president can't be, a former president, can't be criminally prosecuted for official acts, but he can be for personal acts. And what I find astonishing about this is that, remember, 30 years ago, the Supreme Court said exactly the same thing in another case involving civil liability, saying, you know, people couldn't sue a former president saying they somehow were civilly damaged by something he did. Joe Biden never, ever voiced a single word of complaint about that. And now he's saying, oh, no, I, as a former president, they ought to be able to prosecute me for murder, for example, if I order a drone strike. No president's going to be able to operate under those kind of circumstances.
Is there an attempt to make the presidency a figurehead position? Is that a goal, or is that just the end result of them if they were to get their way, which doesn't look like they will?
Well, actually, I think if you look at, I mean, this was just a political ploy. He knows he'll never get it. This was a political ploy to attack Donald Trump. But what they really want, and the reason he's pushing these kind of changes on the Supreme Court, is that they're very unhappy, the left is, over recent decisions that pulled back on the power of the federal government. That's what's really going on here. Because leftists and the folks who infest the Biden administration, they want an all-powerful central government. And they did not like, for example, two of the last decisions the Supreme Court issued, you know, one in which they threw out the Chevron doctrine and said, no, we, the courts, will determine how much power a federal agency has. We're not going to leave it up to the federal agency to decide for themselves. how much power they have. And they also didn't like the decision that threw out a case involving the Securities and Exchange Commission, who, when they went after a guy for supposedly committing securities fraud, they didn't go to court. They didn't go into the judicial system. They investigated it themselves administratively, prosecuted it themselves administratively, and then one had one of their staff, who's a administrative law judge, say, "Oh, yeah, he's guilty." In other words, they're mad that federal agencies can't be the judge, jury, and executioner of these decisions. That's mm-hmm. what's really getting their goat.
You know, you brought up the Chevron decision, and you know, yes. at the end of June, we had the Supreme Court rulings come down, and I think it was. Maybe Joe Concha I was talking with yesterday, but he started listing off a bunch of things. And this news cycle, Hans, has been moving so quickly that there are right. massive headlines that just haven't risen above, I don't know, assassination attempt on Donald Trump's life. Of course not. That's 19 days ago. That's less than 3 weeks ago. But I want to ask you about Donald Trump's legal problems that he has had, because a year ago, when all of these things started to come down and you were looking at all of the legal challenges that Donald Trump was facing, I'm talking to you week after week about this, other legal experts that we have on, and the response is always the same. This is a sham, but they're in jurisdictions where we don't really know how this is going to play out. How would you, in August now that we've arrived in August, that's unbelievable, of 2024, assess Donald Trump's batting average, should you say, over the legal challenges he's been facing?
Man, he's been beating the other side. I mean, right now, if this was a baseball game, it would be like 15-1. I mean, the cases filed against him have been falling apart in New York, in Washington, D.C., in Florida, in Atlanta, because of, frankly, some very good rulings by the Supreme Court, by other objections that have been raised, for example, down in the Georgia case, by the stupidity and, frankly, bad intentions of prosecutors like Fannie Willis down in Atlanta. So I actually think he's doing very well, which helps restore a little bit of my faith in the justice system, although not in the terrible prosecutors that we have in various places.
So if it's possible to take that 30,000-foot view on the legal obstacle course that Donald Trump has had to run through here, they threw down the gauntlet for him. They did get their convicted felon title for Donald Trump, which will likely, as I don't understand any possibility that it would be removed before the election, but maybe you'll say differently. They got the convicted felon thing. That's very valuable politically to the left. Do you think that their actual intention was to get him on all of these things and protect the American people from the dangers that is Donald Trump? Or was it, we'll throw everything up against the wall. If we get convicted felon around there somewhere, good enough.
I think all of this was intended to prevent him from being able to run for office and win. And you can see that when you add the other big case they threw against him, in which they tried to get him thrown off the ballot in various states. In other words, they wanted to take away the voting rights of Americans all over the country and not give them the opportunity to decide who they want as president. And that right there really shows their intentions and their motives in what they've been doing.
Hans von Spakovsky speaking with us right now. He's a senior legal fellow for the Heritage Foundation, the former FEC commissioner. You've written a book about elections, and I think that, you know, there's always the question about who can win. Today, our YouTube poll is, can Kamala Harris win the presidency, yes or no? What do you think? Is she in a position where she could effectively become the next president of the United States?
Oh, sure. I think that's true of both candidates. I mean, Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. And look, we are such a closely divided, evenly divided nation right now that I can't predict who's mm-hmm. going to win in the November election. You know, it's It's very different from some prior elections where, you know, it was pretty easy to see who was going to win, who was going to sweep the nation. This is not one of them. It's a very close election, and there's still a lot of time between now and November.
Hans, the question that there's always the we can talk about polls. We can talk about general election polls, which is kind of stupid. We can talk about swing state polls, which is where it really matters. And then we decide if we believe the polls and we look who was polled. It just goes on and on and on. After you come to a conclusion based on that information, then the next question is always, will it be a fair election? And do you have confidence that in the swing states where this election will be decided, even the swing counties where this election will be decided, that Americans are in a better position in 2024 to trust the outcome of the election, regardless of the results?
That's a difficult question. I think we're in a better position than 2020 because a lot of states have actually improved things. Georgia has improved things. Pennsylvania has slightly improved things. Wisconsin is a little bit better, but it's still not perfect. So we're in better shape. Are we in perfect shape? No, but we're in better shape than we were 4 years ago.
Well, that sounds like positive progress. You've studied this. You've literally written a book on it, How the Left Changed the Way You Vote, which people can check out right now. It's called Our Broken Elections by Hans von Spakovsky. If you ruled the world and could be the dictator for a day that Donald Trump says he's not going to be, what would you have? I mean, the federal government doesn't come in and run the elections. They're run by the states. Do you have very simple things that you would encourage the president or Congress to implement? How would you solve these elections so that everybody could be confident, regardless of the outcome, that they could trust the outcome?
Well, there are two things I would do. One of the keys to a good election is having accurate voter rolls. You know, not having people who are registered in more than one state, not having aliens illegally registered and voting.
Is that easy to do? Is it easy to purge those?
It's not easy. It's not easy, but the federal government has a role in this. For one, federal law requires states to maintain up-to-date, accurate voter registration rolls. It probably should come as no surprise to you that the Biden administration has completely refused to enforce that provision against states who aren't maintaining the accuracy of their voter rolls, like California, like New York. And I would instruct the Justice Department to immediately file lawsuits against states that are not complying with that federal law provision. The other thing I would do is I'd order the Department of Homeland Security to stop its red tape that its bureaucrats have put up and give state election officials immediate access to their database that lists aliens in the United States so that election officials can easily start comparing their voter registration list to the DHS database to find aliens who shouldn't be on the rolls and get them off.
Hans, is it a fact that there are people who are illegally in this country that they are registered to vote?
Yes. We don't know how many. But we know that's happening. We know it's happening with aliens who are here both legally and illegally. It's just a fact that it is. We don't know how big the problem is, but we know it's happening. And there are steps that can be taken to solve this problem, and they're not being taken at the moment.
Man, it would be nice, and I feel like should be very agreeable that you should have to be a citizen to vote. And maybe be able to show your identification, which could be provided for free, from what I understand. That just seems very basic. Hans, we love talking to you. Thank you for being with us today. Good to have you back.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye. Hans von Spakovsky is a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation and author of the book, Our Broken Elections, How the Left Changed the Way You Vote. If you want to educate yourself on what happened last time so that when you're in these conversations, which are going to occur with more frequency in the next few months, check out Hans's book, Our Broken Elections. All right, Wiggins America, when we come back. Gosh, you know, I've been getting these feedback forms in, Brad, and you go to AnnieFryShow.com, fill out the feedback form, let us have it. We want to know what you like about the show, but how we can be better. We can handle it. I can handle it. People love 1245. I don't know why. Wiggins, get in here. It's your turn. Next, don't go away.